Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. A Harvard-trained doctor and MacArthur Genius Award winner who has dedicated his life to working with the Pennsylvania Plain People is working to build a new clinic in Belleville. This largely Amish and Mennonite community, about 40 minutes southeast of State College, deals with a number of genetic diseases, which are the specialty of Dr. Holmes Morton. WPSU's Emily Reddy talked with Dr. Morton about how he ended up working with the Amish, why he founded his first clinic 28 years ago in Lancaster County, and why he's creating this new clinic.
Dr. Holmes Morton, thank you for talking with us.
You're welcome. It's nice to be here.
Why don't you start by telling us the story of the first time you met someone with one of these rare genetic disorders, or at least rare in the wider world, that are now your specialty, back in 1979 when you were still in med school, right?
Yes. The first weekend of medical school at Harvard Medical School, Dr. David Nathan, who's a professor of hematology there, presented to our class a little 8-year-old girl who had a disorder called pyruvate kinase deficiency. She said she never met anybody else with this disease, and it was kind of her secret, and it made her jaundiced and made her so that she couldn't exercise very well or keep up in gym. And she just talked about how difficult it was to live with a rare disease that nobody knew what it was. Dr. Nathan then went on to describe sort of the natural history of this disease and what he and Frank Oskey and others had worked out as a way to manage the disease and allow these children to survive. So we learned about this, and then he later was one of my instructors in hematology in medical school. And then when I was at Boston Children's, he was physician in chief, and today he's the emeritus physician in chief of the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. But
he's in his 80s now and still working.
Working every day. And we communicate often because in the early 90s, I was called by a man from Big Valley, from Kish Valley, I called, and he said, "We have this child who's been sent home from Geisinger Medical Center to die because she has this strange liver disease. Nobody knows what it is, but we think it's pyruvate kinase deficiency. Do you know anything about that?" And I said, "Well, yes, I had a great lecture on that about 15 years ago, and I know the man who writes the book about pyruvate kinase deficiency. So you bring her down to Lancaster General. We'll take care of her and see if we can confirm the diagnosis." And we did confirm the diagnosis, and she was just actually married last November, which makes me feel old. But pyruvate kinase deficiency is one of those disorders that is only found in Kish Valley. We don't see that in Lancaster County. The people who have it, there's 66 people who are descendants of one couple who moved into that valley in 1692, and four of their children were carriers. We've just recently been involved in a study of this disease, and we found 250 patients throughout Europe and the United States and Canada. So this community in Big Valley represents just a small portion of people around the world who suffer with this problem. And everything we learn about taking care of the children and the adults in Big Valley is helpful in taking care of people all over the world.
You're already working in Belleville.
Yeah.
Out of, you know, offices behind an auto parts store.
Yes.
But with the vision of this clinic to come, what will that clinic allow you to do there?
Well, it's about a 16,000 square foot building, and it's designed as a family practice with both pediatric and adult, you know, exam rooms and treatment rooms. It also has a component to provide dental care for those with special needs. To provide care for women with high-risk pregnancies who have one or another of these diseases. It has a laboratory where we can do our diagnostic work. So it's a building that really is going to be a community health center for patients with special needs. And that just includes a list of about 60 or 70 different recessive disorders, you know, we know.
Because there are treatments for a lot of these disorders to help at least make them better. Why don't you talk about pyruvate kinase disease in particular, because there are treatments for that one.
Yeah. It is true that many of these disorders are highly treatable and really should have little impact upon somebody's life if they're diagnosed in a timely way and treated over a lifetime. Pyruvate kinase is one of the important ones because it's common in the community. Everybody knows about it. And they all face the same problems, and that's a crisis in the newborn period where you really have to rescue them from hemolysis. So their blood cells break down very rapidly. So part of our work in the newborn period is just to protect them during that period until their liver matures to handle this. And then we transfuse them for a period of time, and then around 2 years of age, we have to make a decision about whether we're going to remove the spleen or not. The traditional treatment was to remove the spleen, which increases the survival of the red cells and allows them to live without transfusions. We're actually trying to figure out ways to get around on the splenectomy because it's, you know, it gives them a lifetime of risk in terms of immune deficiency. And the next sort of problem we face is pregnancy. It's the pyruvate kinase anemia can interfere with the growth of the fetus. And so we can now monitor the blood flow in the placenta. And if that's compromised, we simply transfuse them with normal blood cells and get the babies to full term or at least old enough that they don't have all the problems of prematurity. And then as people age, they accumulate iron, which is just a feature of the disease. And if they overabsorb iron and load their heart with iron in their liver, they can develop liver failure, heart failure, pancreatitis. And so you have to look at the absorption of iron and devise ways to limit the absorption and prevent that toxicity. So there's really a whole lifetime of care. But if they go to a place where those problems are anticipated and understood and managed, the disease really doesn't interfere with life very much.
And these diseases, as you've said, they can occur outside of the Amish and Mennonite communities, but the tradition of marrying within the community can make these recessive diseases much more common. Just how common are these diseases within the Plain communities?
Well, this one, has resulted in 66 people in this generation having the disease. That's really not a lot of people. Within the community, many people are familiar with pyruvate kinase, but there are a lot of normal children too. One thing to say about pyruvate kinase is that there were thousands of genes that were left behind in Europe. So that we have probably about 60 disorders in Kish Valley that impact health, but that's out of a catalog of 5,000 or 6,000 recessive disorders that we know exist in Europe and which didn't come over on the boats with the rest of them. And one of the most famous in that way is that in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, neither the Amish nor the Mennonites have cystic fibrosis, which is the most common recessive disorder in those of us of European descent outside of those communities.
So in order to do your work, you need to get the trust of groups of people who are not known for seeking help from outsiders or modern medicine, maybe. But it seems like the devastation, especially in the families where these genetic disorders have hit, makes it so that, they are willing to let you in more than they would otherwise. I wondered if you could talk about the family of Amos and Susan Miller, who let you into their house back in the late 1980s. Five of their seven kids had glutaric aciduria.
Yes, you've done your homework. You know about Amos and Susie. They're actually very well known. They were featured in an article in the Wall Street Journal, which is how we funded the last clinic. On June the 19th, 1988, I drove out to Lancaster County from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia to see the first child who had glutaric aciduria. And this disease produces an injury to the brain, a stroke really, that disables them, and they're almost always labeled as having cerebral palsy. Well, it's not cerebral palsy. It's an underlying biochemical disorder that causes a metabolic derangement in the brain that leads to a metabolic stroke, a destruction of the part of the basal ganglia that involves sitting up and controlling movement. So it's that part of the brain that matures and allows a baby to gain balance and sit at 6 months of age and then to pull up and begin to cruise around by 10 or 12 months of age and then walk. And in those children, they have a focal injury to that part of the brain that disables them in terms of their motor control. But intellectually, they're fine. So I spent the summer of 1988 just literally going from farm to farm, and Amos and Susie was about the fourth or fifth family I went to see. And, of course, they were very skeptical that I would come and, you know, offer to do this test of the urine, which is the way we diagnosed it at that time, without any charge. And they had spent thousands and thousands of dollars at Johns Hopkins being worked up by Victor McCusick, who's the world's most famous geneticist and used to travel through Lancaster County finding these unusual disorders and taking them back to Johns Hopkins to do big workups. And Dr. McCusick missed this one. He just didn't do the right test and didn't find the disorder. But by the time I met them, I not only knew how to diagnose the disease and knew what it looked like, but by then I had seen a 14-year-old girl who had escaped the disability. So one patient out of 20 had gotten through early childhood and had not had this stroke. And that gave me hope that we'd be able to prevent that stroke if we just understood what happened at the time it occurred. It always happened before 18 months of age. It usually happened in the context of a common infection, vomiting, diarrhea, chickenpox, ear infection. And the disability would evolve in about an hour or 2 hours. And once it developed, they were disabled from then on. They didn't recover. But I said that I think if we can set up newborn screening to test for this, find the newborns before they're injured, and then take care of them at the primary care level so that we prevent that stroke during these common illnesses and prevent the illnesses, including doing immunizations, that I think we'd be able to, you know, treat these children. And to just move forward quickly, the first patient I diagnosed with newborn screening in Lancaster County was successfully treated. And she's now married, has a child of her own, does not have any disability. And that started in January of 1990. By the mid-90s, we were testing 150,000 children a year in Pennsylvania, because by that time we knew it was not just an Amish problem, but that this form of cerebral palsy occurred in all communities. And around the world, Europe, Japan, all of the modern countries that have screening programs test for glutaric aciduria. It's found worldwide. And the methods that we developed in Lancaster County, and that were also developed in Ireland and Germany, are now about 95% successful in preventing that disability.
And you mentioned that the Wall Street Journal, a reporter from the Wall Street Journal, did a story about you, and he describes how hard a time you were having finding funding, and that actually got you quite a bit of funding. I mean, how hard was it before that point to find funding for the clinic?
Well, I spent a year writing a grant that went to the National Institutes of Health. And Steve Goodman, who had described the disease and was very skeptical about it ever being treatable, had, you know, been instrumental in turning down my grant to say, I just don't think this will work. And so other people were funded. And my wife and I just decided we would go to Lancaster County and set up a nonprofit organization, a 501c3. And so we did that, and we started meeting with Amish and Mennonite leaders talking about this clinic for special children. And they all kind of thought it was a good idea, but they weren't really ready to invest in it. And I think over a six-month period between the time the grant was turned down and we first met Frank Allen from the Wall Street Journal, you know, we had collected a few hundred dollars, and that was it.
And you were actually thinking about taking out a second mortgage on your home.
Yeah, we had decided to finance this clinic by, you know, taking out a second mortgage so we could buy the equipment. And at that point, it was more like setting up a pediatric office that just had some fancy equipment to do genetics. And actually, a midwife, Penny Armstrong, who's very well known in the history of midwifery in Pennsylvania, and her husband, Dick Armstrong, who was an airline pilot, had met Frank Allen from the Wall Street Journal. And so Frank Allen knew something about the culture and was just interested and called me up and asked if he could go around and meet some of my patients and, you know, really understand more what we were doing. He met Amos and Susie, wrote a very sympathetic article. that I didn't think would have much impact on what we were doing. And it led to a landslide of donations into the nonprofit organization, about $500,000. So then all we had to do was build a building and build a practice and set up the lab and survive. And, even though the money helped, it was a lot of work to get that done. But now that clinic, serves about 2,700 patients with, 200 different recessive disorders. And it's a medical home for kids with glutaric aciduria and maple syrup urine disease and other problems.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. Our guest is Dr. Holmes Morton. Dr. Morton has been treating the genetic diseases found in the Amish and Mennonite areas of Pennsylvania for 3 decades.
So why build a new clinic and why choose Belleville for this new clinic?
Well, the success of the clinic in Lancaster was largely dependent upon being a local medical service. It's not just the diagnosis. People can go from Kish Valley down to the clinic in Lancaster and get their diagnosis. But when they're at home and have an ear infection or get the flu or get dehydrated, or
which
have,
we know are triggers for
problems with all these. Nothing gets better with a genetic disease of any kind when you get sick. So they really need health care that includes, everything from immunizations to dental care. They need health care, and they need a community-based local care. We all do, really. So the concept is to identify the people at population who are at risk and make medical care accessible to them and affordable for them, and just do good health care that is aimed at preventing the problems of the genetic disease, but really is almost common sense in terms of saying, if you have glutaric aciduria and you're going to have a stroke if you get influenza or you get whooping cough, you get your immunizations done.
And you said make it affordable. I mean, dealing with these disabled children can wipe out families' finances. You're selling the cows before long, because your kids can't help work on the farm if they're disabled.
Yeah, these are, in terms of personal economics, these are very complicated problems. And one of the themes of the clinic in Lancaster County was to prevent hospitalizations with these diseases and prevent injury, but also prevent the hospitalization and invest that money in a place where people could get care that reduced the rate of hospitalization. And just one of the best examples is a disease called maple syrup urine disease, which is a devastating disorder. When I was a fellow at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, half of those children died before 5 years of age. Those that survived were largely in wheelchairs. They were disabled. They weren't going to school with other children. And not only have we, taken care of over 100 patients with that disorder for over a 28-year period and prevented deaths, we've never had a death from the cerebral edema of maple syrup urine disease. They're going to school with other children. They're getting married and working on farms. And we reduced the hospitalization rate from 7 days per patient per year to 0.1 day per patient per year. I mean, if you look at the value just of improved outcome, reduced hospitalizations, lack of mental retardation, avoiding early deaths, just taking care of those 100 patients more than justified the economics of the clinic in Lancaster County. These are very valuable services that we provide that really intervene in a way that is more effective by working within the community. And when you work within the community, it helps you control the price of medical services, so it makes it more affordable for them. One of the most important things we've done as an independent 501c3 in Lancaster, and we're doing the same thing in Kish Valley, is that we negotiate with hospitals. So if we have a child with congenital heart disease that needs surgery, UPMC will give us an 80% discount on those services, outpatient and inpatient. Mm. We've done over 100 liver transplants to treat genetic disease with UPMC Children's. Very successful program. They do those transplants for cost for our patients. We've really negotiated with everybody to help control the cost so the families get a bill that is affordable by the community. Now, the principle of the way these communities work economically is interesting. They, in 1963, were exempted from paying Social Security tax. Mm-hmm. A man named Valentine Byler was plowing around, bird in hand, and two agents from the IRS came into the field and cut his horses out of the harness and took them and sold them because he hadn't paid his self-employment tax. And this was big news. This was like a front-page story. And John Hostetler and other people who helped protect the rights of the plain people argued that they were an independent entity who took care of those within their community who had special needs and were elderly. And the Supreme Court actually heard the case and ruled that as long as they as a community were committed to taking care of those with special needs, children and adults, and used their own resources to do that, that they would be exempt from Social Security. It also, because they don't pay Social Security tax, they're not eligible for Medicare or Medicaid. All the children we would take care of would be in the CHIP program, which is a Medicaid-supported program, if the communities chose to do that.
Is any part of your work geared toward, is it a possibility at this point, stopping these diseases from being passed along? It seems like in some way, you know, more children surviving, more possibility that this genetic trait would be passed on to their children and maybe make these diseases even more common.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that way, actually. These diseases come to a certain carrier and disease frequency within the population, and they stay at that birth rate, you know, once the population is stabilized. So, but the immediate answer is, yes, we can give people the opportunity to avoid marrying somebody who carries a trait for a lethal disease.
With genetic testing?
Yeah, we just do a test, and we find out, you know, who's at risk. Mm. In the Mennonite population, we've been doing carrier testing for maple syrup urine disease since the early 90s. We've tested thousands of people. And we find couples who are at risk, and then when they have a baby, we test the baby immediately and keep them from being sick, keep them from a hospitalization that would cost $100,000, $150,000 if we didn't intervene that way. That community could use those carrier tests to decide who's going to marry whom. The Ashkenazi Jewish population has done that with Tay-Sachs disease in New York. They have arranged marriages. They have matchmakers, and they go into the school and do genetic testing for who's a carrier for Tay-Sachs disease, and the matchmakers just know not to match up people who are both carriers, and they have decreased the frequency of the disease. I was talking to a bishop not long ago in Kish Valley. I was actually drawing his blood to do a carrier test for a disease called Casper 2, which causes a regressive autism and a seizure disorder, and the people who have that are very disabled. They're very hard to take care of, and they live, you know, 40 or 50 years. It's not just something they get and then they're gone. And I said to the bishop, you know, in your grandchildren, if we found that one of them was a carrier for this, it would not be unreasonable for, before they decided to marry somebody, to test and see if that person was also a carrier. And then they could make a decision about whether having children with this disease is something that they would choose to avoid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very private. They decide to do that. If they have lived with three or four children like this in their family and know how disrupting that is for the family and how difficult the care is and how little can be done for them if they have that gene mutation, then my expectation is over the next generation, more people will decide to find a spouse who doesn't carry that. And that's what being sort of nested or embedded within the community as a community health service allows you to do. Nobody's going to go down to Johns Hopkins and say, I want to be carrier tested for Casper 2 to see if I can marry this man. But they will come to a clinic in Kish Valley.
So you're 66. Mm. A lot of people around that age would be thinking about retirement, not building a new clinic from the ground up. What keeps you working on this cause?
Well, this, you know, this community I've worked with for a long time, and it is kind of an obvious thing to do, but I really had wanted to take the model that we used in Lancaster County, the healthcare model, and translate that into building clinics and building these community health services in other communities.
Because a lot of these people have been driving the 2 hours to come to Lancaster.
So we know a lot about the genetics of people in this valley. You know, I've been coming to the valley since 1989, so I know a lot of people. We had over 500 cases with 91 different disorders that live in the valley. And I knew that what they needed was better local health care. So as part of this MacArthur grant that I had, I wanted to set up a model for how you do that. So we started over again in Kish Valley. My brother, who's a businessman, I recruited to develop the 501c3. That's a legal process, takes about 6 months. So we went through the whole process of setting up bylaws, recruiting a board, mission statements, all the things you need, and a budget, a business plan for the 501c3, and got that approved. We also talked about how to get the community involved. Now, it was easier in Big Valley because by reputation, they knew about the clinic, and a lot of them knew me personally. Now, there are other clinics already. There are two clinics in Ohio that are modeled after our clinic in Lancaster. There's one in Indiana. We've really set out to sort of develop a model that could be used in any community. And the building itself is designed in the way the community can build it. It's a timber frame building. It's meant to be a community project to build that.
And the community's on board with a benefit dinner and auction, which is coming up.
Yeah, we've now had three auctions that raise about $200,000 each. We actually used that as leverage to get a donation from Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh, and they matched $400,000 in matching funds. We've gotten other donors to kind of step in, and we recently had a $100,000 donation. So we're doing fundraising from outside the community, but we're also really looking to the community itself to support this.
Do you have a date that you're hoping to be open by?
Well, we have 6.5 acres of land that was donated. It's on the farm of the sociologist John Hostetler, who studied here at Penn State, did a PhD in sociology, and has written, you know, over the years some of the major works about Amish society. His book, Amish Society, is still a classic. John is gone now, but he was on the original board of the clinic in Lancaster, helped us get that started. And he grew up here in Kish Valley as an Amish boy. His family was part of the older Amish. We're hoping to get started by May the 20th, which is when our next big fundraiser in Belleville is. And these are auctions where we auction off quilts and furniture and hay and everything else that's been donated. And they raise about $200,000. And we would like to have that building project started before that auction because we think it'll motivate people to donate more. Once we start it, the group estimates, you know, if we can start it in May, it'll be finished by December. All it takes is money. Money and work and materials.
Dr. Holmes-Morton, thank you for talking with us.
You're welcome.
That was Dr. Holmes-Morton talking with WPSU's Emily Reddy about his work treating genetic diseases that affect the plain people of Pennsylvania. He's currently seeing patients in Belleville and raising money to build a clinic there. For Take Note, I'm Patty Satalia.